I once read a fascinating account of somebody, and maybe it's going to be a little bit of a sharp muscle, but it's still, I guess, it's the way I feel it. I once read a true account of somebody who was a very big artist, and he was in a car accident, and he wasn't physically harmed, but he had a brain concussion, and when he woke up, he couldn't see color anymore. In other words, the problem wasn't in the eyes, but the brain, something happened, and it couldn't assimilate color anymore. And everything was shades of black, white, or gray, which is black or white. And the person was very, very depressed. It was horrible. He was on the verge of suicide. Imagine somebody who lives color, and all of a sudden it's gone. The person was basically, for 2 years, he was treated psychiatrically, you know, for suicide and so on. And slowly he began to get out of it in terms of the depression part. I mean, he didn't get back his sight, his color sight. And he began to draw in black and white and gray. And the book shows the pictures that he did. They're extraordinary. There's an orange on a table in different shades of gray, white, and black. You have a very clear sense that it's an orange because of the way the colors play, because of the way the light plays, or so on. But it's frightening. And people didn't know. It was a pretty private thing, and most people thought it was some sort of new phase of art, whatever it is, and so on. That was the person. That was the demise. Quite a few years after that first phase, they were experimenting with stimulating brains with some sort of waves or electrodes or something, and one of the things they found was they could give you a pseudo color sight even if a person had other problems, but they could stimulate the brain to do it. And the neurologist who was writing this account was very excited to come, and he calls up and says, you know, I have this Gewaldic thing, let's, you know, we might actually do something, or some get it for partially. And there was a long pause, and the person said, you know what, he said, I've forgotten already about it. He said, the first 2 years you would have saved my life. He said, it's gone, and finish with. That was, that's the story. I once thought about it. I thought about it as a mashal for Olam Haba and Olam Haza. A person in Olam Haba transitions to Olam Haza when he's born. It's a very, very painful process. He's coming from a world that's a gorgeous world into this world. And at some point we say, you know what, even if we get the chance, we say, I really like it here. In the gray and in the black and in the white, this is what I want to say. That's what I once thought of it as a very good mashal for it. But I was inserted as another mashal. And again, I don't mean it as sharp as it'll sound, but my Rebbe Moshe Shapiro is he's known for this, for that. He has a tremendous hekif of different things in Yiddishkeit. I mean, he's at home with the Rav's Torah, as he's at home with Reb Shimon's Torah, as he's at home with the Leshem's Torah. And it's not just that he knows it, he senses it, and he can give you the sense of things and the flavor of it. And Yibbol Chaim Rav Kutzer was also like that. Rav Kutzer had an extraordinary sense for each flavor. And Rav Moshe Shapiro once told me, he said, it's very important to be manchel all the gvanim. Gvanim means shades and colors of Torah, and gvanim. He says every flavor has its own chayin and beauty, and it's important to be manchel it. That was like an off conversation. In Yiddishkeit b'chlal, there is so many gvanim of it. There is the gavan of Yom Kippur, has in itself the bechi of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur has in itself the tefillas. It has in itself the shailas, whether to say Yom HaShabbos Hazeh in the Chazaras HaShatz, or whether to say it in Nilo, or to say it in the private Shmoneh for whatever reason, for each one's own time. It has in itself the gvanim of Hidisairus. It has itself a lot of gvanim. Because the way things shape up in Klal Yisrael, everybody has a sliver. So somebody who's in a so-called literature there, so it's the Gemara and it's the Mishabura. But there's a world out there of other things, and it's tefasta or lo tefasta, and there's always the argument, not an argument. There's a real concern that you can get sidetracked, and there is a priority of what to focus. But it's also important that somehow the flavor, all the flavors of Torah, get transmitted. People look around, and they're in the spoil. There's a lot of sfarim in the yeshiva. That's black and white. There are so many different types of sfarim in the yeshiva. There's ein adoma Reb Tzadik to Mishabura, to Reb Chaim al Rambam, to the Kongedansia, ein adoma Reb Tzadik to the Ishbitzer, and ein adoma Shnehem to Reb Yeruchim. Torah is so infinitely rich, and a person who sits on a diet of black and white, and he says, you know, Torah is very dry, it's very, very rigid, it's got no, you know, it's not multidimensional. So I tell him, yeah, if the doctor put you on a diet of mashed potatoes without salt, you know, then of course it's bland, it doesn't taste good, but you know, there's a lot of other things there, and it's one of the things that you feel sometimes, I guess, a little bit helpless to be manchel. I'm not sure that I had a teferach or a satfirch of it, but the sense of the beauty of Refutas Reinovrocha's yontiv getting together was extraordinary. What the mir meant to me in learning, and Reb Nochum's lichtigkeit in a sugya, and in learning up a Gemara and Rashi and Tosfos, Refutna had it in his world of giving over a yontiv mitzad the atmosphere, the mood, the shevas achim gam yachad, the type of negunim, the Torah, the signum of the Torah. Every yontiv had its own flavor, and he was a master at bringing out that flavor, and he had the kalim. He would overwhelm a room full of people with his person, with his Torah, with his singing, with everything, and it was a world of rich color. And it's not always easy. I don't have the we don't have the personal kalim that they had. It's not a siddush and moisant built on that. But the first to understand, we just went through a day together that was very uplifting. I think all of us felt that way. It was, I think, people thought a lot. People were misfal a lot. It was very genuine. It was very uplifting. I felt that way, and I think the tzibur felt that way. And I think for the first time, it's always a time sitting at this suda. I always feel as when we can get, because the mood had been serious, and because even though everybody fasted all day, people are not sitting and fasting. They're sitting. The food is also kind of ruchnistic. There is a sense of it. It's more the suda shaboy than the food shaboy. The sense of shevasach and gam yachad, enjoying everybody else's company. Just being here together, those are things that are from the ikrei of what it's all about. The dibuk haverim, because we're all together, we're struggling to learn, to understand, to grow, and we're sitting together. The fact that we feel we're in a high dagger, feel uplifted after a day like this, it's very, very special to be together, and it's extraordinarily meaningful. The fact that people know you can make Kodesh out of Chol. You don't have to run around now any place. It's a Yontav Dika evening in the most beautiful way, and it moves me. It's for me something of a high point of the year, and I'm sure for everybody else. That's, I guess, just an expression of what it is. I'd like to add another thing, I guess, on a personal level to somebody, Yeshe Koach. I once heard, and I don't mean it to knock anybody else, but I'll explain in a minute. Rev Bulman, Zechon Evracha, once spoke, he used to speak on Tanesim, and he spoke very, very well. And he said that it says by the, when they went into Golus, they had a navel, and the way the Levim said it was Shir Lanu, and they said Eich Noshir. It says Tolinos Kinor Seinu. They had fiddles with them. the Chazal, it says that the Nochem told them, Kashkeshulonu b'shir, bang to us with a song, and they said, Echnasher, and a bit of thumbs up and so on. That's the Chazal. So Bulman said, the Yiddish instrument, quintessential musical instrument, is a fiddle. The Goyish quintessential instrument is some sort of percussion instrument. He said, "Kishkeshulonu b'shir, bang us out of nigun." And so I chas v'shalom. It says halu b'toyif u'b'novel. Toyif is one of the instruments. But what I mean to be marvelous is a. I'd like to thank Pinchas for being a fiddle. I didn't know that we had the talent in yeshiva. But I mean more. There's a Yiddish folk saying about a yidale mit a fiddle. A Jew had a fiddle. A fiddle has in itself a very neshamitic quality of music. That's why it's so highly unpopular these days. It's people have. If anyone has ever seen the old Chabad Nichoach tapes, first of all, a lot of the music is fiddle music. You know, it's the gunim with fiddle background, and if you see the picture. It's always, to me, a very extremely moving pictures of a yid sitting in a hiltz in a base medrash, in a wooden base medrash, kind of a big room, empty, just kind of really rafters and bare wood, and there's a table with a tiny herring on it, and he's sitting alone with two other people with this big fiddle, and his neshama is going out, and that was, you know, it was a way of expressing neshama, and you know, the type in the Gine and the type in the Gunim, it's maybe I'm a generation behind, but I don't know if it's so bad. It's two generations behind. I started out behind, so I didn't. But it is something special about that. I just wanted to comment about it because it is nice. We're going to go through some of the gunim. I guess over the years we have kind of a. The first insight is I am not a Baal Menagin, so the item has to help. And I'll try to explain a little bit about the negunim. The first negun is about the beauty of the Kohen Gadol that used to come out from Bisholim and HaKadosh. What's the point? Let's stop a second. What's the point of it telling us? In the flow of the piyut, it seems to be crossing over the from what it was like, how beautiful it was when the Beis Hamikdash was there, and how much we lost it. That seems to be the flow. It's somewhere in the middle between the part that's describing how nice it is and the part that's describing how, you know, we don't have it and it's just been a Chorban system and so on. I think there's another knach to it, and I want to try to explain a knach within a knach. The Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh Kadoshim. The Kohen Gadol physically came as close to contact with the Shechina as a human being possibly can, except through Nevuah possibly, but through a Mahalach. That's the closest, like we spoke before Nila. That's the moment of contact with Shechina. We don't have any tefisa in what it's like, and only one person in Klal Yisrael has it. But when we see the person that went in, what he came out with, that's our tefisa. People write books about Gedolim a lot. The purpose is not, the purpose of a kesher with a gadol is not in worshipping the gadol. We don't have a saint's calendar in Yiddishkeit, and it's not meant, but the closest we'll come to seeing something greater than us is seeing Anashim Gedolim. And part of the quality, you know, when somebody asks you what made so-and-so so big, so they start off Hamid Bat Gemara, he learned in how many this and that. It's all true, except that that's not really what you saw. You saw something that you really have a hard time describing. It's this quality. That's one point. That's one nekuda I wanted. I want to say a little edel in nekuda, and it leads a little bit more of a finer havana. Chazal say a mashal with Avram, that if you walk into a store that sells naft, kerosene, you walk out reeking of kerosene. If you walk into a store that sells psamim, then you smell from like psamim. That's a mashal of Avram. It's anyone who came into contact with Avram, so like Pesachim and so on. A child imagines, for instance, in a very fancy restaurant, when you eat food, it doesn't have a blatant flavor or something. There's a hint of a flavor. A cheap perfume is heavily perfumed. A very expensive perfume has the slightest hint of something. A floodlight is not ruchnius. The ha'ara on the kohen gadol is ruchnius. In other words, when you want to grab onto, you say, well, imagine if you walk in Kodesh Kodashim, the lights will be full blast. No. The tfisa of something elevated is always barely perceptible. It's the hint of perfume on the person walking out tells he's coming from perfume. It's a very edel nekuda. It means the havanas, the nuances, when a person has a shayches to Adam Gadol, it's Reb Chaim Shlomo used to say, I don't understand. Avraham Avinu says brought bread and water and butter. So that I do that also. So you'd say, well, the Torah is talking about quality, not quantity. How he served the glass of water, how he did it. A big person is known by the almost that extra touch, a subtlety, that you can tell it apart from something that's just synthetic. Synthetic things tend to be heavy, tend to be gross, tend to be, it comes in bulk. An edel knech, a person who's really it, it's the almost imperceptible sense that comes with the things he does that is special. And that's why when the kohen gadol came out, when you saw the kohen gadol was a kohen gadol, and he had another light shining from him, that was the image of Shekhinah. So I guess start MS and then we'll name tak bedore ma bro ki ma yoit mis bacha ki goy del tili bi ava אשר הוא בשול היצור כברד הנוסון בסכין אסכם כצעיר הנוסון על מצח מלך כחסד הניתן על פריחס Haranasun I'm it's me, Pinachalin. So, right, voice, but we shall call it. Is Asher Hill Bishop Elamitah? Next one is Mirochik. It's from the Rosh Hashanah Dika Haftorah. It's a very, very beautiful nigun. But again, I guess let's give a. I've said this over a few times. It's still as meaningful to me. The one of the feelings I had by Ne'ilah, as it starts moving into the end of Ne'ilah, let me give you a dugme of what it feels like. A person raises a child and takes a long time, Baruch Hashem, it takes 20 years, and you know, you've put a lot into him, and you know someday you're going to marry him off and he's going to leave. You know, but it's a long and hard way till that happens, but it happens. And there's a certain time the child gets engaged and it moves forward, and there's a certain point where you say to yourself, the countdown has begun. It's going, and it's gone. You know that by tonight she's not going to be your daughter anymore. She'll be somebody's wife, and you know, and it's a whole new phase. I mean, Bez Hashem, someday you'll all know the time of it. But it's an extraordinary sense of feeling that something is leaving away. I saw it as a maimer from Soloveitchik of Meirochak Hashem Nirali. It's called. He has another name. Ubikashta Mishram, I think it's called. I don't remember what it's called. And he describes it with a very, very touching dogma. He says that you only have a very close friend, and then he decides to leave and to move to somewhere else, America, Germany, wherever he's going from. And in those days, obviously, once you left. There wasn't going back and forth and anything. When somebody left somewhere else, that was the end of friendship. It was the end of everything. And you know, you busy yourself and busy yourself and busy yourself, and as the as you take him to the train station and the train begins pulling away and he's waving goodbye, when you see the train pulling away with him, that's when all your feelings begin to well up. That's when you really begin to feel empty and the realization that it's gone. There's a certain sense of it on a Motzi and Kippur. There was Sesame Tshuva, there was the beginning of a Zman, there was an Elul, and you know, things really, there was a certain sense of excitement about it, and I feel it, you know, when it starts at the end of Ne'ilah, you begin to feel the clock's ticking, it's not going to last, you can't hold it back anymore. Hashem will Akims are beginning to roll out, and that's it, you know, it's over with. There's certainly a very strong sense of realization. You still could have gotten something out of it. It was there and it's gone. That's why Merochak speaks to me a lot on Motzi and Kippur. So we'll sing, I don't know, most of the Elam probably is familiar with it, but... Neirachayk meirachayk Hashem nirali Ahava saylam Yeah. The next one is very different, and I guess the people who here knew must have been very surprised at the, after the davening when we started Hadaras HaEmunah. I actually, there was a bit of a mistake in something, but I guess sometimes Hashgach also has it. First, why this nigun, and then a little bit more about the explanation. I originally came on it, I liked it because I had heard in Lubavitch the minig was they finish it, they finish Yom Kippur on a triumphal note. The reason is it's a chazal, it's a zayar, a kaddish, which is mechaber. It's a zayar, and this is the medrash in similar language. It's mechaber Yom Kippur with Sukkos. It says like this. It says that besides a personal day of Yom HaDin on Yom Kippur, there's also it's Esav coming versus Klal Yisrael. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Umas HaOlam a reflection of Esav. It says the bracha to Esav was that when Klal Yisrael is married all, when the perigol, he's going to be on top. The Teveya, the world is Tovea Klal Yisrael. The Satan is Galmus is when they came into the Kodesh Kedoshim, the Umas HaOlam tainted that they found the head of a chamor. The Umas HaOlam on a personal level are Tovea v'shem the Satan. That's one in Hayinu Hach. So when Klal Yisrael stands in Yom Kippur in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so basically there's a personal union of tshuva and Cheshbon HaNefesh and Sefer Chaim and Sefer Mavis and so on, and then there's also a much more powerful the Umas HaOlam are being mekatrig in Klal Yisrael, and that's part of the battle. And it says at Ne'ila they spin off. That's when the Esav Halach Darkei, the Isaiah says Dob Ne'ila, and Chazal say that one of the things that the lulav shows is it's like a sword, and when you have two people fighting, whoever walks out with the sword is didan notzach. He's the one who won. So there's also that element. I thought it was this one. Actually, they use a different one, which is fine. They use Napoleon's march. I'm perfectly fine to say with this. This is actually a French anthem in a little bit of a. I guess a fudged version, which I guess we could be credited with Shina Maisa, and it is Hadaras HaEmunah is a Chabad Hadaras HaEmunah. It's not what they sing, but I felt it was very appropriate that we finish off. It's a tremendous. It's one of the things I think that we have to keep telling ourselves. We live with Goyim. We're going to be working amongst Goyim. We're part and parcel of that society, and to understand that no one has a Yom Kippur, no one has even something that's remotely close to Yom Kippur, no one has a matzev where people fast and do a cheshbon nefesh and try to better themselves. It's in a million light years, there's nothing like it out there, and there's a certain sense finishing Yom Ne'iroyim should give, at the end of it all, a person would feel a certain sense of triumph that didan notzach. Listen, it's good to be a yid. It's meaningful. It's we have what to think about. We have what to regret. We have a way how to regret it. We have a way to do what we need to get it off our shoulders and to change for the better. You know, there's nothing like it in anywhere else, and it's a very the Yishmael fast 40 days, and they come out bigger chazerim at the end of the 40 days than the beginning of the 40 days. There's no the musig of chesed nefesh and tshuva and kapara and stichim, the whole package that we have for everybody in class. So it's extraordinary, and it's something to think about and to understand. I also had some words about Hadaras HaEmunah. I repeated it a lot of times, and because of new people, and because I feel the same way about it. Hadaras HaEmunah is a very, very holy piyut. The Maril says very, very strong shyness about how it's supposed to be said, with extraordinary kavanah. It's a shir that Malachim give to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I think it's in the Echolos is the marker for it, if I'm not mistaken. And it, the, all the Rishonim that write about it write extraordinary terms about it. It's singled out as being extraordinary. That's why Chassidim Nagu to say it every day and so on. I saw once somebody who was a frum person with somebody with a black yarmulke, and he was a chayker, and he took a look at Hadas Amuna, and the man was a good chayker. He was a very good chayker, and except that he didn't realize what his gvulas of das are, and there were some very sharp ones. So he writes Hadas Amuna doesn't really, he can't find any real theme in it, so just a bunch of words put together. Now, if he would have come and told me, I know the Nyan they write about, I think it's not true, Mela. But the person didn't bother to look, the person had no clue, has no clue about Chachmas Apnim, has no clue about Shira Samalachim, has no clue about Malachim, has no clue about anything. And yeah, he says he was German, very self-assured. Yeah, Hadels Vemuna. It has no intrinsic meaning. It must be put together by, a computer. That was it. That's how he writes it off. And there's something about it because the person had a big black yarmulke, and it did work, which was very good. When he was comparing manuscripts, the works he'd done is very good. And if he would have stuck to that would be fine. But when a person, with such a guy, I mean, the Maril says that this is a shir. The Maril points it out. Of all the piyutim, this should be said with tremendous achno and tremendous yira and tremendous this. Ask yourself. So the Maril did find something about it. So you call like because you didn't find anything. Like, I don't understand the seichel shabbat. I don't understand where the person is coming from. You don't know. Fine, right? I've tried to find different things. I don't have. I don't understand the teichel. A little modesty never hurt. And that's why it always irked me when I saw it, that something which was mekubal by all Gdolei Yisrael as being extraordinary, that somebody should just kind of pencil it off. Not knowing anything, admittedly not knowing anything. And so it's one thing when a person says, I am Amaretz. And I remember when I was a little kid, we came across in the Rashi, Eini Yodea Ma'ayma, when I was a little, it was third grade, second grade. I still remember it vividly. And I asked myself, I had a good Shaila. If Rashi doesn't know what you're supposed to write here, how does he know he's supposed to write something? Like, I didn't understand, like, the mustig that there's a kasha that Rashi's come. I didn't, so I looked at it and I said to myself, I don't understand Rashi. Like, any idea ma'oimah. Like, so maybe he doesn't say anything. Maybe there should be a Rashi there. So I came up with an answer, actually. I figured Rashi had some code where he knew where there's supposed to be Rashi, and this one stumped. And that was my third grade Torah that I came up with. But humility is fine. You know, a person has his little chaylik, fine. But it's the shira al malchut. I've said it a few times. A general sense. The reason, the way it's built as two inyanim. Some of them are very close, and some are almost opposite. Malachim vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu are. The distinction is Malachim always come in pairs. Is Malachim is situated small, Malachim is situated min. In other words, there's Malachim that are from Midas HaChesed, Malachim Midas HaDin. In every Midah, there's Malachim that are Mashu stone and Malachim that save Lot. A Malach can only do one Shlichus. Gemara speaks about it in when he speaks about Anil Le'Sarif and Anil Le'Malach, and Malachim are the root of where Malach is oyser shlichus echod. Malachim cannot do two opposite things. Malachim are very specific. Each in his own world, in his own inyan, is a total hanhaga. You know, Zemaral is mechalik. He says Malachim, each one in his world is a total hanhaga, but his world is. It says oyser shalom bimroimav. Michoel is mayim, and Gavriel is eish. Gavriel is the chefetz of eish. Michal is the chefetz of mayim, but they're mutually exclusive. Adam has both tchunis together, but he's on a lower darga. So Adam is similar to Tzelem Elokim in the sense that he can be koilel everything, but on a low darga. Malachim are, in a certain sense, the ultimate darga, but they are very specific. That's the way Malachim vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when a malach is meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now we, by us, it says when we owe up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's his shevach. Malachim ha-meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Michael and Gavriel together say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is koil eishamayim, that's when that's when you have a real shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So all of it, I think, like the very first one, Aderes v'Emuna, the Aderes is something that usually hides something, that covers something, and Emuna is the belief behind it. Some of them are very similar, some of them are distinct, but that's the Shevach of Malachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the little bit that I can garner out. This is the Ktzei of the Ktzei of the Ktzei of the Ktzei. But still, it's so we'll do it together again. It's and again, bearing in mind that the triumphant note is the sense of Nitzachon of Klal Yisrael of Umos Olam. Yom Kippur is what solidifies Klal Yisrael's matzav versus Umos Olam.
Oh,
One thing I want to share is probably my favorite thing, and someday the fiddle will go well with it when we'll work it out. I'll tell you something about the background, and like everything, we'll add a few more nakudas. It's funny. This I heard on an old record. 45 years ago when I heard it was an old record. So it was like scratching very early. But I then read the story, how was this Galgal? And the story is written by Chaim Shapiro. He writes a present event. I also, we sang it every Matzah and Kippah. I liked it a lot. I found it an extraordinary nigun. And then somebody, I think, Dan Kramer, found in Chazal that wanted a shotim of this event. Is on Yom Kippur. Ginas Egel is talking about Yom Kippur because an Egel is mislachlich and it misnaka very easily because it has a shell. Same thing Klal Yisrael. So it does have a Yom Kippur Geshaychus actually. The story goes as follows. Chaim Shapiro was in a labor camp in Siberia during the war years. And he managed somehow to avoid Shabbos working on the rices. He had, so one of his jobs on a Shabbos was to deliver something on a horse to a neighboring camp. Like the camps were stringed together and each one was very separate with barbed wire. If you went without permission, you could get shot. Not you could, you probably would get shot. So he was sent to deliver some mail there, and he goes into the camp. And he sees the strangest looking creature, overgrown, and somebody with like beard and like wild unkempt hair and beard. And he's sitting in a little bush, like next to a bush, to himself, and he's singing Zmiris. Shalshuta Zmiris. So he goes over to him, Ayid, or something like that, and the guy like makes believe he doesn't understand. And then he talks to him, and the guy realizes he's from. And he says, yes, and he's a breast of a chassid, he's been in the camps for who knows how long, and the Russians have a fixation on the Shigoyim, Rasputin. They have a certain stereotype of a person who is crazy, but like divinely inspired crazy. And they leave those people, they're kind of heroized in a certain sense. So this person looked the part, and the kid said, he tells him if he kept Shabbos, he said he's kept every single Shabbos. And Chaim Shapiro told him, oh, I said, you know, I have a tefillin. And the person jumps up with a wild look in his eyes and he says, you have tefillin? And it's Shabbos today? For 20 years I'm waiting to put on tefillin? Tomorrow morning at 5:30 at the crack of dawn, I'll be at the place. So he told him, it's impossible. You can't move from camp to camp. He says, I'll be there. And at 5:30 the next morning, he feels somebody moving up to his bed, and the guy's there, and he grabs his film, and he puts it on, and you know, crying, and choke crying, and every day he came to whatever he's moved camps, and he told him as a schar, he'll teach him Delgina Segos, which was an old breast of a nigun. The content of it is extraordinarily fit. And then I want to say over two more mices along the same theme. The content is, it's a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. It's run on as a nigun. The pasuk is Al Ginas Egos Yiradati. Kadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyochel came down to the orchard of nuts. Nuts are in Chazal, in Kabbalah. They represent something very special because a nut is something which the shell is very hard and very tough. It lasts, however, much longer because the shell is hard and tough, and that's why dirt doesn't penetrate. So the shells are called klipas. Klipas egois is the lashon of Chazal use in nigla. Klipas of egoism have a mokum and aloha, klipas egoism in a lot of areas, between muktzah and tomentaira and tzvoyim and all sorts of things. But also, it's a kind of paradox. Because the outer shell is so tough, that's why the inside stays so good. So this world is described as a kind of ginas egois, where Kadosh Baruch Hu goes down to see what's right for picking. So it says, "Al ginas egois yiradati lirois be'ibe anachal," to see the greenery that grows along the river. That's where the most sprouting happens. Lirois, to see haparchai gefen, have the grapes, have the vineyards blossomed yet? Heinetzer moinim, have the pomegranates opened up yet? The next pasuk is Le'yadati Nafshi Samasni, but in the Nigin it goes together Le'yadati Nafshi, and there's a Yiddish part to it that kind of explains the point of it. The Yiddish is printed, I don't know if many will be able to read it, because it's written in Yiddish. It's D'mame hat mich geschickt nisach zu kleiben. My mother sent me to collect nuts. Wie hoch ist der Baum? How tall is the tree? Wie niedrig sind die Kinderlach? How short are the kids? Le'yadati Nafshi, I didn't know myself. It's a metaphor. It means the word mame, mother, means the Shechina, the chelek of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's shayach to us and our nesyonis, and so on. It's because mama in Lashon Kodesh is Rostevis Melech Malchem Lochim. It's because mother in the language of Kabbalah, Ima, is a pchina of Ima Bonim Smecha. It's a pchina of the Shechina, the part that is most metapel with. So the Yiddish is HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us down what looks like an impossible task, to go and to pick nuts that are beyond us. The tree is so tall, the kids are so short, Le'yadati Nafshi, we didn't know ourselves how far we could reach. Obviously the Nigin has a lot to do with the Teichet. I want to add two more stories about it. There was a Yid that I knew personally. He lived in Eretz Yisrael. He wrote a book under a sort of a pseudonym called Sabato. His name was Ablazer Nanis. He was an old Chabad Yid. When he died, he must have been close to 100, I think. He was in camps 20, 30 years. I think he never worked Shabbos. They had him for 10 years. Then they said they would release him. And as he walked to the gate, they put him back for another 10 years. They would tell his wife if she could visit him. She would travel across half Russia to visit him. And then they would cancel the visitation. The amount of emotional... it's impossible to understand how a human being could go through it. And he lived the last 30 years of his life in Eretz Yisrael, and he was a Fabrenta Yid all the way, Mishunadik. A chav of mine went to learn Tanya by him, and he asked him, his first question was, Welche Mesechtes hat ihr gelernt? What Mesech did you learn already? So listen to 5-6 Yeshivish Mesech. So it's Yeradaf Leren Noch Nigle Nacheret Mekenen Leren Andre Sachen. I want you to learn more Mesech than we can learn this. I mean, I just don't understand the matter of factness of the way he approached this and this. He wrote up his book. It's called Sabbat, I think it's called. It's just not very hard to believe how a person like that existed. There's another Yid who I knew, Yitzchak Zilber's Panim Bracha. They just came out with a book in Hebrew. I know him personally. The stories in the book are fantastic, but they don't do justice even, because the Mesirus Nefesh is way beyond it in what I saw. I mean, he literally couldn't breathe and he was running all over to take care of milas and stuff like that. It's just not normal. I also happen to see, it's something very powerful when you see something. They have these 1-minute videos that Aish puts out. And they had before Rosh Hashanah, they had an extraordinary video, it's a 1-minute video, of a person who's living in Los Angeles. His name is Dr. Melamed Cohen, I think Rachman Melamed Cohen. This is a person who was diagnosed 14 years ago with Lou Gehrig's disease. Any of you who don't know what it is, shouldn't know. It's a disease that takes away every drop of movement from a person. It attacks the nervous system. I saw once a person with it. It's horrible to see it. It shuts down muscle by muscle every part of the person. 14 years ago, they diagnosed him with 3 years maximum to live. He's still living. Not only is he living, he wrote 9 sfarim in the interim. They showed us sfarim that printed. And he does it, the only muscles in his body that he can move are the eye muscles. So they have a special camera, like, and that translates to the computer, and it records his eye movements and translates into a book. It's a very powerful. They show him wielding. I mean, person literally is like a stick of wood, and they show the books he's written. They show the eye movements. It's done very professionally, very well done. And then the last frame is, it says, you know, Rosh Hashanah is the day when the book of life and death is opened. And then, with a lot of effort, he's able to get out of his mouth two words: choose life. And then you see a slow smile, the muscles beginning to open up into a smile. It's very, very, very powerful. But a person doesn't know what he can do until he's put to the test. The test usually brings out from a person things that he never thought he could do. And that's the nigging that's so appropriate for the events that, and so on. So I will. El hina se goyis yoradeti
Yeah.
It's open to you. So,
Are you speaking?
No.